So I'm in Swindon and it's a sunny day in Swindon, not like the snowy day I came at the beginning of March to Swindon to record. And I'm with Natalie Marshall in her house in Swindon. Thank you for having us, Natalie.
You're very welcome, always, as I hope you know.
I do. In fact, I think I still may have a key to your house.
That's fine.
I'm not exactly sure where it is.
That's less fine.
I think it's in the key pot. Every now and then I come across it and go, I think that's Daniil and Natalie's house.
That's good. That's good.
So the first question for today is, where did we first meet?
I'm pretty sure that it involved canals and pims. Quite a lot of pims, if I remember rightly.
Possibly, yes.
On the roof of the canal boats.
Yes, yeah.
In quite a lot of sunshine.
Neil and I were discussing whether we'd met up before then or whether we met after, whether we came for dinner after then.
I don't think I'd met you before then. I'm fairly sure that's the first time I encountered you.
Okay.
Because I'm fairly sure that the only other people we knew on the holiday were Stephen and Catherine.
Okay, so that would have been the time that we met. So I'm going to try and find that picture that we have of all of us to put up on the website. So
I know Catherine has a copy in her spare room.
Okay.
If you can't find yours.
Well, it is on Facebook, so I should be able to acquire it if necessary. So the next question is, do you drink tea?
Would you like to read the mug that I'm drinking tea from?
It says, tea is the finest solution to each catastrophe or conundrum that the day may bring. That's, yes. That's
is that a good answer?
That's a very good answer, Natalie. Yes. And what's your favourite tea?
Well, I wrote down on my notes, because I wrote notes, Lady Grey. But actually, that's not right. I think my actual favourite cup of tea is Marquis Grey, which is Waitrose's own version of Lady Grey. Other supermarkets are, of course, available. But I believe that Waitrose are the only ones that do their own version of Lady Grey. And the benefit being that Waitrose one is A, cheaper, and B, fair trade, which Twinings is not. And I think that's what we are drinking now.
Yes, it's lovely. In fact, Neil fed me Lapsang Souchong, and that was very smoky. And this is very orangey, so that's great. Very different. Mm. How do you respond to the statement that Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Well, I wrote some notes and I still don't really know how I respond. Various things came to mind. It's impossible for Christianity to die if we believe it's the truth and if we believe it's objective truth rather than just true for me. Then it can't die. That's not actually possible. My mind went to Narnia and the endless winter, which then got woken up from. So it can appear to be sleeping for an awful long time and still not actually be dead. My mind went to the verse, unless a seed falls to the ground and dies. Sometimes when we think something's dead, it's not actually dead. And also I thought, well, it depends on whether we mean established Christianity as an item or walking with Jesus.
Mm.
I do wonder whether established Christianity may die, but I don't think walking with Jesus will ever die.
Partly why I'm doing this project is because the evidence from my own church is a bit contradictory.
Mm.
So whatever I do where I work, I do not seem to be able to get people to come to church on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
But people are coming to all the other things that we do.
Exactly.
And that really doesn't look like death to me.
No, exactly.
I was editing my interview with Justin Brierley, and I'm going to, before I start talking now, I'm going to actually go home and check the figures for Christmas, and before I say however many percentage came to church at Christmas. But usually it's about 30% of our population in our villages come to church in the month before Christmas and Christmas itself, which is doesn't seem to be very dead to me.
No. Well, pretty much ditto here.
Mm.
Messy church is exploding out of the walls. We can't accommodate everyone.
I was wondering about coming tomorrow, but I won't.
Well, I won't be there because I have to take the children to swimming club, so I'm no longer involved in it, which is sad.
Mm.
But because messy church is brilliant, Sunday mornings, less movement, less happening. Is that a problem, or do we just need to catch up with the rest of the population?
Since we don't have Neil overhearing this conversation, there is. I mean, I think for me, there's something about Methodism being so totally culturally right on for when it was founded, but then kind of having stayed there a bit. And actually, we've seen all sorts of seismic cultural changes in the church in the UK, and the way that Christianity is expressed in the UK over many years. And I wonder if we're in a shift.
I have a friend who's a pioneer minister in Sheffield, and most of her work is with Muslims. Mm. But she is very definitely walking the way of Jesus. Now, of course, she does go to church on Sunday mornings, but she is introducing these people very slowly and very gradually to the way of Jesus. Now, that doesn't count in any figures for Sunday mornings. But is it Christianity alive and well? Oh, yes.
Mm. No, this was a question I wasn't sure if you'd know the answer to, having only sent it to you this morning. So, you've worked for the past 20 years as a woman in the IT department of a large car manufacturer. Mm. What have been the joys and challenges of that role? And do you think gender has been an issue there?
Joys, the main joy has been the people. Almost all the time, and almost all the people I have worked with have been a complete pleasure to work with, and I am still in touch with many of them who have come and gone. I think every single leaving do I've ever been to, and there's been quite a lot over the 22 years, have said, actually, for all the hassles and for all the bad stuff that gets thrown around, the people here are great. And that's what everybody always says. And the other joy is the changing technology. I am a bit of a geek. I enjoy technology. I enjoy working with it and trying to keep up with it. Having said that, one of the main challenges is keeping up with the technology as it changes, especially working full time, juggling that with a family, especially with a husband who works more than full time, as teachers do. Mm. And I found that a massive challenge. Has gender been an issue? Oh, absolutely. Have I made it a big issue and tried to do something about it? No, I've kind of had bigger fish to fry. And I've, during most of my time with having young children, I've kind of wanted to keep my head down is probably the wrong phrase, because I've never been a keep my head down sort of person, but actually not make a massive issue and just get on with my job. My first full-time boss working for the same company was a woman. Helen was an inspiration and was a huge support when our daughter was first diagnosed as being ill, both in pregnancy and when I returned to work after she was born and had various surgeries. And I think I've always had that at the back of my mind, and that's been brilliant. But I do know that I've been looked down upon and passed over probably for promotion because of my gender, and probably also because of my faith. I've had managers openly tell me that they are absolutely, completely, totally and utterly assured that I am less intelligent than people who are atheists because of the fact that I believe in God. Quoting Richard Dawkins at me. When that's your manager, it's quite a challenge.
That's really interesting, because we've discussed that kind of view with other people in the podcasts. And particularly sort of for Bishop Lee and I, and the response to us leaving science and how that is. Gosh.
But at the time I needed the manager's support, because I think it was just before another surgery. So you kind of say, well, that's what you believe. It's not what I believe, and get on with it.
Mm.
Which isn't great, really.
Would they have said that to a person of any faith, I guess?
I think he would, yeah. Mm-hmm. Knowing him, yeah, he would have done. He also said that since I had a poorly daughter and I was her mother, perhaps I shouldn't be working full time, because it was a mother's job to be at home with a child.
Yeah.
So he had some interesting views.
Yes, interesting views there. And I guess that's the thing, though, isn't it? Because we all suffer from this, am I going to keep quiet about something because actually I want the best outcome and I don't believe making a fuss is going to bring that out. Mm. And at what point do we stand up and yeah. say this is justice? When I was interviewed for one of the church jobs when I was first curate, I was asked if I was going to have any more children on the show round the vicarage. And I didn't make a fuss about that. I knew it was illegal.
Yeah.
But I wanted a job in the diocese, so I wasn't going to actually make a formal complaint at that point.
No.
And that's...
And exactly, I was on the point of having to take time off for another operation for my daughter. So making a big fuss of my manager being sexist and anti-religious people was not actually going to help me at that point because I needed his support for getting that time off.
Yeah. The next question, how do you think growing up in Japan, then moving to the UK, has influenced your views of the world?
I think it's given me a global view and it's encouraged me always to look at the bigger picture, always to see outside the natural boundaries, to always question what is normal. Very simple example would be, in the UK, it is considered rude to sniff in public. In Japan, it is considered rude to blow your nose in public. Now, ask any normal Brit, and they'll say, well, it's obvious it's rude. It sounds disgusting. Ask any Japanese, and they would say the same about blowing your nose. So immediately you have to question, well, why does it sound disgusting? It sounds disgusting because you've been told it sounds disgusting. And you have to question, actually, what is normal?
Mm.
And I think it's given me a better ability to do that and to do that almost without thinking. And I think actually that's one of the reasons why the whole thing of Brexit upsets me, because I see the world much more as a world, as a whole, rather than as UK here, Europe there, Japan over there.
What has been your funniest experience about being bilingual in English and Japanese?
I'm looking at the notes I wrote and I'm thinking, I'm going to have to word this quite carefully for this to be broadcastable.
It's all right, we can record it more than once if we require.
So I was up in the mountains, actually with my husband, but we'd gone to the public bath, so he wasn't with me. We were split, male, female. And I was with my mother, who spoke fluent Japanese, my sister, who is half Japanese, and my friend Jacqueline, who also spoke fluent Japanese. So four of us looking Western, but all speaking pretty good Japanese, and getting into this bath. Two Japanese ladies in the bath. One turned to the other, and in an attempt to make it broadcastable, commented on the size of the ladies' appendages. I simply turned to the ladies and asked them in normal Japanese whether the water was good this evening. They fled rapidly. I have dined out on that story many a time.
It's interesting because when I was in Japan 6 years ago, I did feel that the women were staring at my chest. And I felt like I would get a t-shirt that says, if you think I have big boobs, you should see my friend. She's just behind me. We were travelling with a group of people, and I certainly wasn't the best endowed, but I didn't do that. But I always remembered that story, Natalie, when I was being stared at in Japan.
My sister's godfather, who unfortunately deceased many years ago, remembers seeing, or used to tell the story of seeing a lady crossing the road, Japanese lady, obviously had no idea what the English on her t-shirt meant. It said hot milk.
Right. So I've put on this on here. Tell me about your holy grandmother, and you can talk about your holy grandfather as well if you like to.
It's funny, isn't it? I think of my grandmother as being very holy, and I don't often use that word to describe my grandfather, but he was the bishop. Part of that is because I knew my grandmother so much better, because my grandfather died when I was much younger. I was 11, I think. Maybe a bit older than that, but certainly not out of my teens. They were both incredibly down to earth. My grandfather, who was known as Fafa, he saw action in World War I, and therefore couldn't see action in World War II, despite trying. but still believed. He still believed in the ultimate goodness of God. And in fact, there's a fascinating interview with him and the Imperial War Museum, because he was decorated in World War One, and obviously him then becoming a bishop was notable. Mm. He refused to marry my grandmother during World War Two because he was in London and he wouldn't bring a young lady into London in the middle of the war. He also said that my grandmother was the one thing that prevented him from becoming a Catholic, because he was very Catholic in his outlook. Although being very Catholic in his outlook, he also understood when rules were there to be broken. One very clear memory of him was when I was desperate to be confirmed, my mother wouldn't let me, and he brought home consecrated elements from church and gave them to me, which of course was strictly against the rules, especially in those days. Mm-hmm. But he saw that as important as recognising my faith, and kind of overruling his daughter.
Although strictly, the rule does say that you should give communion to those who are confirmed or are desirous of being confirmed, which you clearly were.
I was. I don't know what the rules were in those days, but it was certainly out of the ordinary to do that.
It was very out of the ordinary.
My grandmother, one of the stories I remember of her was she had an inherited title. She was Lady Laura. And she was often described by sort of farmhands on the family farm as not at all like a lady, which she thought was the biggest compliment ever. She used to wander around in ripped jeans, picking blackberries from the bushes and all this kind of stuff. It was brilliant. And I remember coming home from boarding school once and finding bits of red insulating tape stuck on random things around the house. Ganger, which was what we called her, why have you got red tape stuck on weird things around the flat? Oh, it's to remind me of the ever-living presence of the Lord. Oh, okay. And every time you saw a piece of red tape, it would remind you about God, because that's what she'd put it there for. And there was one on the remote control and one on the bottom of a teapot and all sorts of random places. But that was very much in her personality.
And I guess the next question is, how has their faith impacted on your life?
It's a foundation in many ways. Although it's my faith, I built it on the foundations that they dug. It was so firm for them. It underpinned everything. And not that they didn't doubt, I'm sure they did doubt, but there was a sense of God will get me through the doubts, always. And not knowing the answers is fine as well. And the fact that my grandmother lived through World War II, my grandfather lived through both World Wars, and that they still believed in a good God. Well, if they can manage it, so can I.
Hmm. If they were here now, what advice do you think they would give to the church?
One word, love. Love people. And I think we bury ourselves in theology. And my grandparents both studied theology, both of them. My grandmother had the equivalent of a degree in theology, which is very unusual for a lady in those days. And obviously my grandfather did. But at the core of it all was love.
What's the most fun we have ever had together that is broadcastable?
It's got to be canal boats and pims and saucepans full of water being chucked across the canals, hasn't it?
Possibly.
Although I also wrote down dinner parties. Do you remember before we all had children and we used to dress up and get the yeah. candelabra out? And
Before children. Yes.
And drink cocktails. I seem to remember drinking Sex on the Beach with the trainee vicar, which we thought was quite amusing.
Very, very fine cocktail there of Indeed. Cranberry juice and other things.
And also being served crudities and fondle at one point.
Yes, I think we'd had too many cocktails before the main course. Yes.
Which was crudité and fondue, obviously.
Obviously. Yes, do you think those times will come back when our children leave home?
One can but hope.
I was just...
You may need to take another sabbatical for them, though.
I was just thinking, because, of course, my eldest daughter's driving test is on Monday.
That's a very scary thought. And I still remember going to see her when she was 3 days old.
But she does realise she owes us quite a few lifts.
Excellent.
So that's good. And in this time between when she's 17 and 18, she's kind of aware that this is peak time for her to repay some of those lifts while she still can't drink, really, when she's out.
Perfect. It should remind me to cash in on this.
Yes, do. So our last question is, what is your favourite thing beginning with tea?
I've written down four things. Tea. I'm very fond of drinking tea. I've written down Tokyo because I have very fond memories of growing up in Tokyo, despite the fact that actually I don't like big cities at all. I've written down technology because I'm a bit of a geek. And I've written down teacher because I'm married to one and I'm quite fond of him, really.
Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
It has been a long time, yes.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the things I'm really bad at is saying thank you and ending the podcast, so I need to practice that. So,
that begins with thick tea too.
Well, saying thank you.
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? So thank you very much for taking part in the tea project, Natalie.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for feeding me tea. And introducing me to the Marquess Grey tea. That's great. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.